What's up, my Thursday Thoughts of a Tea family? It's your girl here, Angie H, and it's 2023 already. Can you believe it? I wanted to start 2023 off with a very important topic. We're seeing so many celebrities, especially black men, committing suicide, and they appear to be okay. We never seen it coming, which made me think about black men and their mental health. This is something that we need to discuss. So I sat down and had a conversation, a round table discussion with the men in my life, my husband, my sons, my son-in-law, and my brother-in-law as well. And we actually sat down and had this conversation. And I want you guys to tune in this week. I also want you women to pay close attention, because I did ask the question, do they feel that women provide a safe space so that they can empty out themselves and have that place where they, when the world is against them, they have that place that they can actually get things off their mind, that they're not holding it in and bottling up inside. So stay tuned to this episode, and I hope that we all learn something from it. What's up, Thursday Thoughts Over Tea family? This is your girl, Angie H, and today I want to talk about mental health for men. And I have some men in my life, my family, and I just wanted just to have a dialogue on what it is, and if we are creating safe spaces, I should say, for them to even express themselves, with so many suicides amongst black men having to be told to man up and not be so soft. What are we doing? Are we contributing to them having these mental health crises, or is it something else that we need to do? So ladies, pay attention. All right, so I'm going to start first. They're just going to introduce themselves, and I'm going to start with the husband. Say your name.
Tornby.
Oldest.
Dear.
Middle.
Devin.
Brother-in-law.
Stacy.
I guess I would call him my son-in-law, y'all. We going to see how this works.
I'm Xavier.
All right, so again, I just wanted to ask you guys about mental health, and I guess I'm gonna start with D, my oldest son, only because I was a 16-year-old mom when I had him. So for about 10 years it was just me and him, and I know I was hard on him. It was punch him in the chest, it was quit doing all this whining. So D, do you think that now, as an adult man being 25, do you think that how I told you to man up shaped you for now, as a grown man, you don't show your emotion? Do you feel like it's a safe place for you? Did I kind of damage that a little bit?
I don't think so, but it's different strokes for different folks. So, I mean, your teaching was different for me. It helped me a lot that some stuff calls to show emotion, and some stuff you can't let your emotions get the best of you. So I take most of this stuff with a grain of salt, but not for me. It wasn't hard on me, but sometimes it was, but sometimes it wasn't. And like, sometimes I needed it, and sometimes I was like, dang, is it really called for?
Oh, okay. That's, you know, I needed to be checked, so I appreciate that. Devin, you being the youngest, do you think, and then you have two moms, I'm your bonus mom, and then your mom.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, and now you're kind of out on your own, you're finally out, you're away from your parents, having to go through school and trying to learn a trade, do you deal with like periods where you have like mental health issues, or you kind of little depression or anything with not having any parents around? You feel like it's kind of when you by yourself.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that Tia or myself or your grandma Earlene, do we create a safe place for you to call home?
Yeah.
To be able to vent and get that stuff off?
Yeah.
So do you deal with different things now being on your own for the first time that we might not be aware of? Is it kind of like challenging?
Yeah,
because you've always been with somebody.
Yeah, I just gotta get used to it. You know what I'm saying? I'm still learning, still growing, so I'm just trying to, you know, take it slow. Take everything slow. You know?
Okay, baby Junior. Head like it's Uncle BJ. let's see, Xavier. So I know you're 30.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so you had a lot of different training, like different things that you went through personally. I don't know your, you know, entire story, but, you know, we'll get you back on one day to kind of go through the things you went through. But do you feel like you had to struggle with your mental health as you were growing?
You want the truth or a lie?
We need the truth. We cold-blooded and cutthroat around here.
So mental health for me was like a huge part of my life, and it kind of still is. When I was a kid, it was hard for me to find that safe space. Because my mom was a single mother, and we didn't have any male figures, you know, so yeah, that safe space didn't exist when we were younger. Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of hard to, like, accept it, because now she's trying to present herself to be that safe space, and now it's just like, well, this wasn't who you was before, so now it's hard to try to accept it once you've already been catalyzed.
Okay. Now, I mean, I know you're saying that she's trying. Is it that when you needed it, when you were shaping, now that you're an adult man, I know you said it was hard for you to kind of accept it. Do you not trust her being that safe space because this is new, a new attitude that she's taking, or you just had to figure it out and maneuver your whole life, so now it's just like, I just figure it out?
I think it's mostly just trying to figure it out. That and a combination of both, actually. Where I wanted to trust you, I couldn't.
Mm.
And then, like, now that I can't for real, you want me to, and it's like...
It's a battle.
It's a battle to try to find that balance. I made a song about that.
Oh, okay, we're going to have to get you on here to drop just a couple tracks. Now, with dating our daughter now, and I know mental health for both of us because of the things that we kind of have similar growing up, being around stronger females, or our moms being a certain way. Do you feel like you can trust her more in that mental health space, or is a situation where both of you guys are learning and trying to be that safe space for each other?
So we trying to be that safe space for each other. Because in areas where she's, like, calloused, I'm not. In areas that I'm calloused, she not. So it's like a balance, but it's like we trying to get the real ebb and flow of things. Mm. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. My brother-in-law.
Yes, ma'am.
So how you dealing with, and then you're raising sons.
Yeah.
So, as far as mental health, like, you know, therapy or showing emotion, are you based on everything that you went through? And again, you have a whole story that we can do just me and you one day on our own, because the stuff that you've been through at your young age, like, really is going to be an eye opener for so many young boys. And I love the fact that because of that and the mental health space you were in, you do pull your nephews, you do pull your son, you do pull the little boys on the street that are going the wrong way. So how did you maneuver? Did you ever feel like you had a safe space, or you just had to freaking get it out the mud?
Oh, I'm going to say both. I think that, you know, for me, it was, you know, we came up in a family full of boys, so it was, mm-hmm. it was rough and tough. It was never much that was not shown to us. It wasn't much that we never seen, because everything was on the table for us. It was, you know what I'm saying, even down to our mom, she was rough and tough with it too. So, you know, but for me, you know, I had to fight for my mental health. I had to really fight for it. And I'm at a point in time in my life now, you know, I'm really starting to be able to balance it out and understand myself more and who I am and who I should be. So, yeah, it was a rough and tough battle, you know. But when it comes to the safe space, you know, I had my family around I always had my brothers and my family around, but I always still felt alone. I always still felt by myself. It was going to be, you know, the things that may have took place and the things that may have happened to me. So
okay.
I had to really kind of like find that. You know, I had family around me, but I still didn't really have them around me, if you understand what I'm saying. It was mm-hmm. just like I was still in my own world, in my own space. So you know, I had to really find my mental health and really try, really, you know, I had to go through the therapy. I had to, you know, look on YouTube about it. You get what I'm saying? Just look at different things that could, you know, help me progress to that level I want to be on. But I had to really take that. I really had to take a stand for myself and really try to look, examine myself. So it was a hard thing, you know what I'm saying? You know, and it made relationships hard for me because of my mental health. And it made, you know, me getting to that next level where I wanted to be in life, where I think I should be, you know, it hindered me. My mental health hindered me. I think my boys, they really got me through it. So my sons, they really got me through it.
And like, now with everything that you feeling like you had to be, you know, alone, are you talking to them about the importance of it's okay to show emotion, it's okay, come to me, I'm the safe space, so that they'll be able to process it, so that they won't have to go through feeling like they have to, you know, put this shell of protection on?
I'm literally getting to that point in their lives. I'm literally cracking that piece of them now.
Okay.
Because I think I created a space for them. I believe, me not knowing how to be a dad at first, because, you know, I'm learning, you know, this learning process.
Right.
You know, I became dad, like, what, 19, 20? So it was a lot, and I was still doing whatever I can do. So I think now is the most I've ever really, like, slowed down and really, like, try to lock in with them. So I try to now really give them that, hey, this is what it is, this is what it ain't, this is what it is, this is what it ain't, and just really giving them that process and breaking it down and trying to help them grow as young men. So I know now, as a man, if I can catch them now and build them up, they'll be fine by the time they get my age. They ain't got to worry about the circumstances, heartaches, or whatever, if I crack them down now.
So right.
I think now is the most I've ever really broke out to them. Like, hey, and they young. Like, you know what I'm saying? They look at me sometimes in my face and be looking at me like, I don't know what you talking about, but I'm like, don't worry, you understand.
Right.
But I still give them to them. But yeah, I think right now is my whole thing is, you know, making sure that they stay balanced. I want them to stay balanced in every aspect of life, not just one. You know, sometimes you be balanced in one area and then imbalanced in one area more than another area can still be unbalanced.
Right.
So, you know, but yeah, so my whole goal now is to make sure that they stay level-headed and stay grounded to the point that they don't trip and fall, and to the point that they can't get up or they're sitting on the ground for too long.
Right.
So, yeah, I try to create that space. Now as a man, I'm creating that space for them more because I'm learning about myself more. So
that's dope. Okay, philosopher. Oh, my husband. What do you got to say to the people?
Well, as I sit here and listen to everyone, I don't know what is expected from a, I can say, black male with mental health. From a young age, I'm the oldest of three. I was the oldest, adding my cousins, the oldest of, what, six, seven. My mom was in an abusive relationship when I was 10. So I didn't have a chance to cry, have a lot of emotion, because I felt like I had to be there for my mom for the abuse she was going through. And I had to run to phone booths. We didn't have a phone. I had to run to the phone booth and dial 911. And when she would at work, I had to help take care of my little brother. And so I never had a chance to sit down and figure out what is mental health. I grew up in a very violent environment in Virginia. You couldn't show you were soft. You were scared. You couldn't show that. My father was in the streets. So I didn't hear him tell me that he even loved me until we was in a car accident. So that was something I didn't hear from a man at all until something tragic happened. Becoming a man, I have sons and I've prayed on it. and I want to make sure everything that I missed out on, or I felt like I missed out on in my upbringing, I was going to reverse that with all mine. All mine. I made sure I told them I love them. And they know this. And I hang the phone up. And I tell them I love you. Every son. My brothers, they know. I love them. When I sat outside with Xavier, we had a long talk about different things. I can see where he's coming from because I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
10 times over. So the understanding of what mental health is, I don't know. I know the scientific definition, but every man has his own battles and travels through the maze of just understanding what is asked for or asked of you. I know now, being a husband, I can't show but so much, because I'm the captain of the ship.
And I was damaging to your mental health. We just gonna keep it 100. I was a piece of work when it came to your mental health. And I own that. And that was a single mom being hard on me. That's how we, you know, say you don't need no punk ass man, basically. Mm-hmm. So that was what I brought into this marriage 15 years ago. So I know for, and that is why I asked Dee that same question. Did I create that space? Because I didn't know any better. I was 16. But continue.
And just to tap on what you just said, yes, that was difficult, because I want to say the first time that you seen me cry, your reaction was, what the fuck is wrong with you?
I did.
Because that's not something a man's supposed to do. And now, turn all that around, I give thanks to God blessing me with my youngest daughter. Because any gaps that I think I may have, he puts her in there to fill that gap. So, like I said, mental health for me, it's a learning process. Steady learning process.
Because, I think the youngest, Kylie, was there for all of us, because we missed the mark with these two oldest ones, with Ananda and Dee. Mm-hmm. Ananda didn't get that same opportunity that Kylie got.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't have that mental health tap in, because that was taken away from her. And it wasn't nothing that she did, and it wasn't fair to her. But then now, as far as Kylie, when you say that you had that opportunity to see what that mental health is, Kylie is a better wife than me. And she's 10.
Mm-hmm.
She pays attention. She knows when you're not feeling your best. That day that you said it, I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? Kylie was like, Daddy, it's going to be okay. What do you need me to do? And I was like, dang.
Mm-hmm.
So she's taught both of us. But as far as like that space, you know, Ananda didn't, she couldn't be that space for you because she wasn't allowed. And that wasn't even on her.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah.
So, not saying in conclusion, I just think now, since we now have a cornucopia now. And what I mean by that is, we have a lot of young men in my family now that the door has been open to talk, conversate, release. Things that I didn't have when I was younger. Things that my youngest brother felt like he didn't have. So now we're trying to create that environment so that the boys that we're raising to men will be better fathers, husbands, men, in the cities and societies they're going to be dwelling in. So I do appreciate my struggles, because with my struggles, I was able to build something better within my children.
All right. So let me ask you guys this, and I ain't going to hold y'all much longer. So I know for me, what I started doing was I started buying books on dealing with black men and mental health. Just getting an understanding of kind of what y'all do, because I'm not a man. I don't know what it is that I can't show this emotion because I'm the protector. I'm the provider. If I lose my shit, my whole family gonna crumble. I don't know that pressure. So I know for me, I started taking that opportunity to like read more. What do you guys, and any one of y'all can chime in, y'all don't have to go in any type of order, but what do you think that we as women can do to make that space better? Xavier.
I felt like you was going to ask that question.
You did.
I really did.
But let me get shot on off. I get ooh, it. Ooh.
But I think first, this is just my opinion. I think first you have to want to be gentle and soft and nerd. You have to want that first.
Mm-hmm.
And then actively practice that to create a space to where it's like, even if you don't, even if your man doesn't, or you don't go to your man asking him what's wrong, he's comfortable enough to come to you. You know what I mean? But me personally, I can't do that if I'm dealing with, you know, somebody's just hard, just a woman that's just hard. Like,
mm-hmm.
just gotta want to be soft. Just gotta want to be soft.
I can do that.
My thing is, whenever I need, like, a quiet space for, it might last an hour. Like, some days it lasts an hour, some days it lasts 2 hours. But I get in my head a lot, so I just want to take a little quiet time, like, either play my game or...
You've always been like that.
Chill out a little bit, because I'm a heavy thinker, so it's like, sometimes I'll be like, dang, I got to go do this. Dang, tomorrow I'm going to have to do this. All right. Mm-hmm. Next week, I'm going to have to do this. So then I just need to sit down sometimes and just slow my mind down and be like, okay, I can do this today.
So and just then, having that space where
yeah,
I need it to like, be quiet.
If it's in my
But it's nothing to do with you. This room, is just my space. Yeah. I need this moment to gather myself.
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing, I'm going to say the biggest thing with that is, for men, we have a different decompression style. Period. In the society we live in, women want men to react like them. Talk, tell me what's going on. That's not how we deal with things. I think in the show we just watched, Best Man, when he divorced his wife, his boys came over. They didn't say a word. They set the card table up, set everything up. And everything in that moment for a man was being said. We are not a verbal type of people. We're action type. That's why in the society of men, you can tell a man everything you want to tell him. He gonna want to see what you're gonna be about. That's how men are made. That, you know, even when we say we love each other, yeah, I hear that, but every time I call you to need to talk to you, brother, you ain't never there. So you showing me that it's all words. It's not what you really, you know, what you're not being about what you talk about. So I feel like if more women would do the research on men. We're in a society where a man has to understand everything about a woman.
Mm-hmm.
How she feel, how she talk, when she like this, when she like that. But no woman is ever taught to understand your man. So when your man do something, most women are taught by society and wretched TV shows, your first reaction is, why are you so soft? Why are you this? Why are you weak? You need to act like this. And at that point, just in the nature of a man, there's not too much conversation. So if I tell you already, you don't feel like talking, and you keep talking, there's going to be conflict. Because I've already told you, I don't feel like talking. And it's not because I'm trying to be violent. I'm not being disrespectful. I just need my...
decompression.
I need my time. All right, my decompression. I just need my time. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going in the room. Even if you want to come in the room and sit down, come in the room and sit down. Quiet. You ain't got to talk to me. And I think women have a hard time understanding. A man wants his woman to be around. You ain't got to talk to me the whole time you're around. Just be my safe place, so if I need to talk to you about something, you're there. You know, don't try to force me. Because maybe right now I can't comprehend or I can't put into words how I'm feeling. about a situation. Because my first reaction is to punch somebody in the face. Because we're simple when it comes to that. It's violence or everything. So we're trying to even understand, as men, what mental health is. You can't punch anybody in the face when they get on your nerves. So now I got to figure out, what do I do? Because everything in me is swing on this nigga. And I mean, and that's factual. But every man here understands exactly where I'm coming from. It's hard. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
I think for me, I think that women should be more logical. I think that women should be more logical. When I say they should be more logical, I mean women should be more. This is one thing I don't understand. A woman to go through a whole bunch of emotions in a day's time and expect me to understand what they went through without saying nothing. But then expect me to be just as emotional as she is going through that moment. But then when I come shut off, she looks at me like I'm the. I'm the villain. I can't fix what I don't know what's taking place. And the first thing a woman say, you know. So true. You sitting here acting like you don't know. Right. I'm like, yo, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know. You know what happened. I'm like, nah, no, just help me out. But then the first thing she get out of her mouth, you man so slow. I mean, realistically, think about it. Am I really the slow one that's asking this person, hey, how can I help you today? I mean, at the end of the day, when you go on to Bojangles, they be like, hey, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You give them an order, you tell them the order, they give back to you. They have a conversation with a random person in a restaurant. Why can't I have that same conversation at my home and I can't have it at home?
Right.
And you know what I'm saying? It's like, daggone. Like, you know, if you went into Bojangles, you was like, hey, I'm like, how can I help you? Then you just, you know what I want. You know what I want already. You know what I want.
Thanks.
No, I don't know what you want. Tell me. What's going on? No, you already know what's going on. No, you get what I'm saying? Is it sweet to you or is it chicken biscuit? I'm like, look, that's my whole thing with women is they don't break, you get what I'm saying? You're expecting someone to understand something that they don't know. If it's something that happened early in the week you're still mad about, bring it up again.
So you can address it.
Address that again. If it's something that's going to say, address that. Don't walk around sitting there. And I think that women are very emotional.
We are.
You know what I'm saying? They're very emotional creatures. So like bro said, we have to, as the man, we got to go in there with chisel. Breaking this thing down. You got a whole wall up. We don't even know what's behind the wall while we're breaking it down. We don't know what's about to come out of here. It can be a full-blown outbreak. But we're going to break it. But, you know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. It's like, we shouldn't have to. I think that also, and this is for men too, I think that we have too much high expectation for one another as people. We expect too much. So when a failure out of another person comes, we become destroyed or completely annihilated. I just don't know what to do. I didn't know you was that kind of person. I think that that's one thing. One thing I say is that, number one, and this on both behalf, stop putting so much expectation into one another. Stop letting someone else control your love and your happiness. If you love somebody, you love them. You know what I'm saying? If you're happy with somebody, you're happy with them. But don't let someone control that. And I think that's what, a lot of relationships is going on today. And even with men, mental health, men, we become overwhelmed trying to figure out, especially as the black man. Like, listen, I tell people all the time, look, I don't know, when I walk out that door, I don't know if I'm coming home.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Literally. Right. I mean, I have my own people that's going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
I have the police that's going to kill me. The little Hispanic guy on the street don't like me, or the Asian either. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I'm the most hated.
Right.
Literally. I'm not. And it's not me sitting here being a person that's, oh, because you're black, you feel, no, look, I'm the most hated.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody hate nobody, like they hate me.
It's definitely a target.
And then I'm a target, so then when you become a target in the street, then you come home, you got to come be the target at home too.
Right.
You get a whole target at home. You can't even talk to your woman because point being, you a target of her too. Like, nigga, you ain't shit. Dang, I'm like, you know.
What I do this day?
I had a hard day. I think that, you know, it's not enough nurturing, but then we have to also look at it too. And I always say this, it goes in a complete circle. we as I think that as men also that we could do more to take care of our black women. And the reason that these black women are acting these, and I'm talking about black women mostly. And as a matter of fact, I'm just talking about all around women most, because there's a lot of women that's going through the same exact thing. And I think that women, being that they are emotional and they do go through so much, they hold it much longer than a man will. They always holding that, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, always holding on to that. And I just think that, you know, I think if we stop damaging women so much, we might have a better better outcome for us. But a lot of women ain't nothing you can do. You know what I'm saying? It's already there. You get what I'm saying? So when it comes to you, it's just a whole bunch. There's 10 other relationships that you still got on. Mm-hmm. And it's at your door. So I just think, you know, as men, we should also, you know, nurture the women more. Treat them right more. You get what I'm saying? You know, do more for them.
Little give and take.
Give and take. It's a spa day, Will, or take her on a nice little dinner date. You know, just treating her flowers, open the door. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Giving her a different feeling.
So that she'll be open to that. She'll be open to it. To give you that safe space.
And I think sometimes, you know, men, goes back to men, like, yo, we shut it out quick. Once we feel like we don't know what's going on, we shut it out. That's it. I ain't got nothing else to deal with. You good? All right. You ain't good? Okay, then cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we don't deal with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not about to keep dealing with all that.
Right.
And that's the side of us that we're not emotional. We mm-hmm. like keep going through a bunch of emotions.
Well, also, even what you're saying, I'm trying to see how can I say this. I'm going to say for women, don't take everything we say personal.
Ooh,
like if you say something about how I feel about a situation and I tell you, and the first thing you do, you would take all that to yourself and then you're angry and you're pissed off. So now I can't tell you how I feel because you're going to take everything I say as if it's a dig at you. So no, I can't tell you what's going on. I can't tell you how I feel. I'm going to keep everything to myself because you take everything personal. Don't ask me how I feel if I tell you. Well, why you say that? Because I know that one time. Think, whoa, how this flip back on you? And then you crying. And then when it's supposed to be my moment to release some pain, now I'm patting you up trying to figure out why the hell are you crying? And I'm the one supposed to tell you about how bad my day was. So even it's, we gotta, for women, you gotta catch your manipulating ways in that. Because if you want your man to really open up and tell you how he really feels, you can't flip that on them. And if you want us to totally understand how you feel, you have to meet us halfway. So we can understand not what you being upset, not what you crying. Just tell us how you feel and give us time to, in our brains, to understand what you're trying to say. Because a lot of times you guys tell us stuff how you feel and our brains don't make any sense. Like, that was stupid. What is she talking about? So you have to give us a chance to de-scramble womanese and make it manese. Mm-hmm. And I think then we can get somewhere. But in that, there has to be some time between the conversation and what my reaction is. You don't want my reaction as soon as we had the conversation because it's not going to be what you're looking for. Because I now have to decipher what it is you just said to me, and this comes along with men's health. A lot of men only try to do that because we don't want to hear the woman's mouth. Even in society, it's so happy wife, happy life. Mm-hmm. So it's like, screw you, nigga. Who cares how you feel? Let's see how she feel, because as long as she's happy, no one cares about how you are. And so now we're in this place of mental health. Men don't know what mental health is. I don't know. You want me to cry? But if I cry too much, then I'm soft.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I can't cry too much. But if I don't cry at all, what's wrong with you? You're holding too much in. Yeah. So we're trying, like I said, we're trying to figure this out. Like my brother said, we come home from being out of the house. Yes, I'm not saying that I should have a pair of slippers and a newspaper in the front door, but be happy your brother made it home. Yeah. Give me a hug. Kiss me on the forehead. Mm-hmm. Glad you're here.
Oh, yeah.
Brother, you made it.
Yeah. What you think, Dale? What you think? You 20. You like, you know what? All the places safe to me, mama.
I ain't had no problem, mama.
Yeah.
You got anything to add, Dale?
That's what it's all new to me. I'm trying to get understanding.
So you just soaking it all in? Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's good. I'm pretty sure the boys are soaking it all in too. I know my daughter's here. My son's girlfriend Mia, and you know the other ones that's here listening. They're still young, so they still got a ways to go. Ananda, do you feel like you are in a place of your own healing that you are able to be a little bit softer, or it's a process for y'all too because you still have to go through?
It's definitely still a process, especially growing up the way that I did. I have more masculine energy than anything, so being, and that's what I've had to have for majority of my life until this last year, where I've actually been able to look a little bit more into my feminine energy and actually be allowed to be a lady and not have to be forced to take care of myself and someone else. Mm. So giving a man enough space to be masculine, but there's also a balance because a woman isn't always going to be fully feminine, mm-hmm. and a man isn't always going to be fully masculine. Mm-hmm. There's a balance between both femininity and masculinity between both parties. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be understood. And each individual person needs to do, Xavier's favorite word, introspection. And a little... and look into your inner self and really figure out what's going on. And we... Like, if we're having problems in a relationship, we did the pros and cons of our relationship and shared them with one another. Like... what's going good in this relationship, and that's what we would like to hold on to, but also what is also a negative outlook in our relationship, and how is that going, and how are we going to change those things to become something positive?
Oh, y'all adulting, I like it.
So it's been very hard.
All that writing.
he didn't write nothing. It was all in his brain. But as women, I think it's a great idea to write things down because our brain is always so jumbled up.
Right.
So for me, when I need to have a conversation with the person that I love, I have to write it down and really think about what am I going to say and how am I going to stay on topic? Because as women, you are going to hit 10 different things.
Right.
And that is exactly why they can't never figure out what is, okay, but what is the big picture? Right. What's the big thing you want me to fix right now? I was like, because all these little things that happened during the week, I didn't know nothing about. And now you're blowing it on me. And I was like, you want somebody to fix it for you right here, right now. But sometimes you have to fix it for yourself and really do talking to yourself in the mirror, like just figuring out what you want and how you could be a better person for someone else. Because you can't expect someone to just come to you and everything like that, especially if you're not a safe place. And I can honestly say I'm not a safe place all the time, mm-hmm. because sometimes I have to remember, oh, I'm a little bit too manly right now.
Right.
Like, I need to open up. I need to listen.
I get
it. And it's not always an easy thing to do, to sit back and be quiet and listen to what's being said.
Even though your mama don't know how to be quiet.
None of my mothers do. And that's why it's hard for me.
We make it hard for you.
No woman in my family knows how to shut up. None of them.
We always got something to say.
Yeah, and it's always like, and the reason a lot of the women in my life were single parents first. So you got taught as being a daughter of a single mom, mm-hmm. be masculine. You don't need a man for nothing. You're going to pay your own bills. You're going to be the source of your own happiness. Like, you don't need nobody else for nothing. But then trying to be in a relationship and not want to, oh, I don't want you to do nothing for me because now you're going to throw it back in my face. No, I don't want you to do that for me.
Right.
But now it's like, so what do you want me to do?
How can I fix it?
So you have to learn how to accept things and give. I was like, because us as women expect so much,
mm-hmm.
but give nothing.
Mm.
Like, I gave Xavier flowers one day because I was listening to a conversation that black men don't get flowers until they're dead. Mm. Why is that?
Facts.
So ooh. I ordered him a nice bouquet of flowers and got them delivered. I was like, cause they don't get a whole lot of love and be told I love you and get any type of affection until they go through some type of loss or they're in pain or something. Oh, now you want to love me because I'm hurt. Right. And now they don't want it. Because when I actually needed you the most, you weren't there.
Right.
And so now I don't need you at all.
Mm-hmm.
I can definitely agree with that. And And you know what? And that's been my whole thing. This part of my life now. This is a little off top subject, but man, for every single body, make sure y'all give them folks flowers. You talking about mental health? The reason why a lot of people going through mental health because ain't nobody reaching out, ain't nobody showing no love,
right?
And ain't nobody there gonna say how you doing and I love you. It ain't none of that. You ain't no hugs going on. It ain't none of that taking place. So that's one of the biggest reasons why a lot of times mental health is really going the way it is. That's for man and female. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, I've come to this person now, this point in time in my life, is to give my flowers to whoever in front of me. Hey, look, hey, here you go, boom, bam, boom. I try to pick somebody out every week to get something to.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, if you just got to live with that, make sure you ain't just been selfish and always think about yourself.
Right.
Stop thinking about yourself all the time. Because realistically, all this is going to go downhill soon. Mm-hmm. None of this is going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody going to be gone, like she said. You know what I'm saying? And we're going to wish we did a lot more
than
we didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So do it while you're here. Take the time while you're breathing to make sure you're doing something for somebody else besides yourself. Don't be selfish.
Because the person crying the hardest at the funeral
is the one that did nothing. Did nothing. Mm-hmm. What you think, Mia?
It's just such a large topic. It's hard to narrow down what to touch upon. But I think for me, at this point, in terms of like relationships and Black men and mental health, it's very difficult to navigate how to be a safe place for someone when you're trying to find how to do that for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I take it day by day, y'all. I don't know how to comfort myself. I don't even know when I'm upset. I think to myself, what is something Dee could say that I would want to hear? I can't even formulate an answer.
Right.
And so I think a lot of frustration comes out of, well, I'm feeling bad, Dee's feeling bad. We don't know what to tell each other.
Right.
A lot of stresses we have, I feel like, in common. And so it's almost, I know I don't have the capacity to be an amazing girlfriend and be that completely safe space because I'm merely trying to figure out myself. But it does make it easier when you have a partner that is patient in that process. And we're navigating it together, I feel like, and we're learning it. And, you know, it's different because I'm a full-time college student. Dee has been independent since he was 18, and he has, you know, these grown man bills and this and that. And so there's different aspects that neither of us could relate to, and we don't know how to necessarily comfort each other with those stressors. But all can ask is for that, you know, that daily patience, and we have conversations about it, and I think that just makes a big difference, just that patience. And, you know, we're getting there and navigating those conversations and just, you know, how can I be a comfort to you and be that space for not only you, but myself also.
That's a good point. Well, the patience he didn't get from his mama. Okay. He got it from his pappy. Because he see how his daddy had to deal with me. That's probably why he patient. So we're going to thank his father.
We didn't know if they was
going to
make it for a long
time. Honey, them first six. I was about to be a single mama. Well, I just wanted to thank you guys for talking with me so that we can kind of at least scratch the surface. I know we can't get to everything, but at least we kind of know and we can kind of hear what y'all are thinking and the things that we need to work on. And I could take some pointers from y'all, especially from my daughter with these flower giving. You know, I think I'll go out and buy a sugar or something, honey, but I ain't think about no roses. So I guess I'll give them a rose or something. You want one? You don't want a rose?
See, exactly. You just got to ask. Like, what do you want? And then go get it.
Save me some time. If only women
could be that easy.
Right. Well, again, I thank y'all so much for doing this with me and talking with me and sharing your feelings and your thoughts and giving us something to think about where we can create these spaces for you guys. But until next time, stay tuned for the Black Excellence 365. Hey guys, I know you probably wondered, who is Angie H? What does she do? Why is she here? Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I am the owner of Anish Charles Organics, which is a holistic company where I provide holistic health tips. I provide products as well as coaching. I'm also the founder of Defining Our Purpose Women's Ministry Group and the author of a devotional journal called Inspirations. If you want to find out more about me, you can simply go to my website, DefiningOurPurpose.com, DefiningOurPurpose.com. What's up, my Thursday Thoughts Over Tea family? I am back with your 365 Black Excellence moment. So, the Black Excellence that I wanted to talk about is Frederick McKinley Jones. Mr. Jones is the reason why our truck drivers are able to deliver our food, produce, anything that requires refrigeration upon delivery. He is the reason why we are able to get that to destinations without it becoming spoiled. So Mr. McKinley is the creator of the refrigeration in trucks. So how they used to send it to the destination was a least effective way, which was salt and ice, to try to preserve it. With this invention, he was able to create something where they can deliver at a longer distance without having to worry about losing lots of money because the food didn't make it or it was spoiled by the time it got there. In addition to that, he kept going with that refrigeration. He was able to create the air condition for the military field hospitals, as well as refrigerator for the military field kitchen. So while the military was out protecting and serving the country, he was able to create something where if they were in the hospital, they can cool off. And if they needed to protect and preserve their food while in the field, he created that as well. So I think that is pretty dope. In addition to that, so this man created so much, but in addition to that, he also created devices for the movie projectors, as well as box office equipment that gave tickets and made change. So because of all this dopeness from Mr. Jones, he was the first Black inventor to receive the National Medal of Technology in 1991. So let's give it up for Mr. Frederick McKinley Jones, as he is the reason that I'm able to get my fruit and my steaks without it being spoiled. Now, if it's spoiled when you get it in the grocery store, that's not on Mr. Jones's creation. That is because someone dropped the ball with getting that meat out so that we can purchase it. So again, our Black Excellent Moment goes to Mr. Frederick McKinley Jones. Well, Thursday Thoughts Over Tea family, we have come to the end of another episode. So thank you for hanging out with me this week. If you want to stay in touch with me, remember you can follow me on IG at Thursday Thoughts Over Tea, or you can subscribe to the podcast on all major platforms. Until next week, thank you for tuning in. And remember, conversation is always better over a hot cup of tea. What's up, my Thursday Thoughts Over Tea family? This is your Tea Time Bestie here, Angie H, and I want to get into a serious topic today. I want to talk about trauma, how a lot of us don't deal with trauma, how a lot of us don't feel safe to share trauma. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I was binge watching the Miss Pat show. I've never seen it. I know it's been out for a while, but one of the episodes that was that I came across was very triggering to me. It was an episode about molestation. Being someone that dealt with that, being someone that has been around that in my family and seeing how people move when it comes to that, they don't really want to talk about it. It's kind of that what goes on in this family stays in this family type thing. But why? Why are we putting people through this? Let's get into it on this week's episode of Thursday Thoughts Over Tea. Hey family, welcome back. So again, let's get into this serious topic. It's serious and it's needed. And the reason why I say that is because so often I see represented in families, in TV shows, even on social media, when it comes to trauma. We in the Black community, and I don't know if it's in other communities because I am not a part of that community per se. But I know in Black culture, Black family, it seems that we deal with the same traumas. And it seems like the response to that trauma is always let it go, sweep it under the rug. And then you have children that grow into adults that have all this trauma unresolved because you don't want to make the family look bad. Because you were taught what goes on here stays here, or you just didn't trust that people would treat your concerns and your trauma with softness, compassion, and understanding, or even try to get you any type of help. I don't know if we were taught that therapy is not what we do. Because in therapy, there's a way for you to share everything that is plaguing you. That is a safe space for you to tell, per se, what's going on in the house that they say should nobody know what's going on. And one of those things that I have seen over the years that is the most nastiest, dangerous act in any family is molestation. I know firsthand. At 7 years old, I dealt with it. I never told a soul. It was to the point that I blacked it out completely, that it was happening. And then one night, I woke up screaming and crying. It was just random. It was unresolved trauma. It was random. I woke up screaming and crying. And my husband was like, "What's wrong? What's wrong? You okay? You have a bad dream? This and that." And I said, "I'm having these flashes out of nowhere. And I don't understand why I'm having these flashes." And I explained to him what the flashes were. And it was trauma. It was the trauma that I had suppressed from 7 years old. That I blacked out and never resolved, never said anything, never told. And to this day, a lot of people don't know because I only share these things in places that I feel safe. And I seen how my family handled family members being molested by the uncle. And I see how they continue to this day want to suppress her, want her to be quiet, want her not to say. And I mean, they treat the pedophile of the family like the man of God. He is a man of God and this and that. And y'all walking around with him on this pedestal as if he has not touched and violated all the girls in the family. And so this is one of the reasons why I feel like I never felt safe enough to share this situation, but it started coming back. I had to deal with it, and it was just like random, and that is what happens with trauma. We try to suppress it, we try to overlook it. We don't want to be the black stain on the family. We don't want to be the ones that cause division, things of that nature. So we suppress it, and we don't even feel like our emotions and our fears and our hurt are valid, because someone is going to tell you, we know, but we were told not to say anything. I'm so sorry, but you're comforting this person in private, but you're not calling out the pedophile in the family. And then they expect you to whole conversation, talk to them on the phone, and no, there's nothing that you can say to me. Even if you did not do it to me directly, it has been known that it has been done and you have nothing for me. And this is the situation that I'm seeing. And in that episode, Miss Pat and her sister, they never told anybody about the trauma, but they went through the trauma together and they dealt with that trauma in different ways. The older sister became a drug addict. The younger sister, well, your younger sister, Miss Pat, became a drug dealer. And so she thought, Miss Pat is a comedian, so she thought making dark jokes about it is how she dealt with it, is how she was healing. But it was very triggering for her sister that took her back to drinking or whatever. And they were saying that that's not good, that's nothing to joke about. But then it was a song. So the molester was the mom's boyfriend, so the mom never knew. Same situation. But a song triggered. He would play a song every time he took them to the cemetery where he molested them and then brought them back home. So sometimes we try to block out these different scenarios. We try to act as if it doesn't exist because you don't want to be the black sheep of the family. So you don't say anything. So you put your health and your life and everything on the back burner to make the family look good, when it's the family that should protect you. It's the family that should keep you. And because of these experiences, I am very, very protective over my kids. Not just my daughter, but my boys too. Because again, I have been a safe place, but my older son didn't feel comfortable in sharing until he got older that he had a similar situation with an older girl when he was in daycare. At the time, he was not living with me. I was, you know, young mom, you know, trying to get money, save money or whatever, and he was in the care of somebody else. I didn't find this out. He don't remember the girl's name. He just knew that she was older. So I deal with that. I have to deal with the fact that my baby went through that, even though I was a young mom. So I am very high alert. I have those open discussions. Tell me anything. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's family. I don't care. They're going away from here, period. And they can say, and everybody can say what they want to say. People are so protective over the wrong things. This is serious. This person is sick. This is trauma. And I do, and I believe in therapy. And you have to start therapy young, because if you suppress these emotions and these feelings, it comes out in different ways. And I sit and I watch social media, and people are protective over these people that violate and take and rob the innocence of young children. And we are more protective over the image of what we want our family to look like to other people that really can care less about us at all, period. They really don't care. But yet and still, we care more about an outsider than we do in protecting the innocence of our children. That is triggering to me. But for me, I have really embraced being the black sheep. I don't fool with my family that much. I don't do any of that. And this is not my immediate family. I'm just talking about in general. I am to myself. I have been labeled difficult. I have been labeled the attitude. But you know, a lot of times that I find out that the one that speaks out, the one that doesn't care, the one that doesn't bite their tongue, they're always difficult because you're going against the grain when you should fall in line. So if I was a yes man, I was falling in line. I was always trying to make it right. I was always trying to fix things. I was cool. Everybody wanted to be around. But now that I'm going to call you out on your mess, we are not doing this. This is not right. This is not right behavior. Then everybody talks about me. And I'm fine with that because I have my core. I have my family. Some would share my DNA, some do not. But at the end of the day, as adults, it is our job to protect our family. And it does not matter what anybody else has to say. And it's sad that this has been going on in families for years. And we have been told to deal with it. I know older women, 60s, that have been violated by family members and have yet to say anything and interact with these different family members at different family functions as if it's okay. And they still expect you to smile and hug the pedophile. And when you get to rattle too much, then you get the secret inboxes. I mean, can you take that down? Can you this and that? Absolutely not. I cannot. At what point are we going to protect the victim? The whole thing, R. Kelly. Yet the family offered up their children. They fed that sickness within him for financial gain. Everybody involved is sick. We see that so often. Women will sacrifice their kids for drugs or whatever, and they're not held accountable when you are supposed to be the one that protects. We're supposed to be the adults in situations. We're supposed to be the one with sound judgment, and our children should feel safe in our presence. And yet, we offer them up. We don't fight for them. We don't get them the treatment and the help and the therapy that they need to deal with it. We protect the pedophiles in the family, making the victim feel like it was their fault, because we don't want a stain on the family's name. And again, that episode was triggering for me because I am that victim. From age 7, I'm almost 42. So I'm very protective over mine. They can't go too many places. They're not spending the night with anybody. I don't really allow them to be around too many family members because if you're coming against the victim in the family, I can't trust you to protect my kids. I can't trust you not to say, we're going to handle this and let me call your parents. Are you going to say, well, don't tell your mama, I'm going to take care of it? No, I told my kids, I don't care who it is, tell me. Because it's not, you're not the problem. And people always, I kill your parents if you tell. You're going to have to try, because they're going to tell. And it's just really sad. And it is something that that I think we need to really get to the root of. It is a mental illness. You don't know what type of anguish. You don't know what type of pain. I watched plenty of episodes of 600 Pound Life with my daughter, my 10-year-old. She loves that kind of stuff. And when you go through some of those episodes and you see those women that have gained all this weight and they have to go through therapy, a lot of their weight comes from trauma. And food is a comfort because nobody there was to protect them. And quite a few of them were molested. And so that trauma don't just make you feel bad. It causes so many other issues in our lives. I mean, we have to. I deal with so much. And I believe in therapy and God. Period. But we in the Black community we gonna pray about it. We can. And then we gonna go to therapy as well, because at some point in time we do have to understand that we need somebody neutral to get these issues out. We need someone that is actually gonna hear us and help us to deal with this trauma that's unresolved. And so I am here as an advocate to say, don't let anyone sweep your trauma under the rug. Don't let anyone make you feel less than. And don't be around any family that feels like you should keep your trauma a secret. And this is any type of trauma. Disrespectful, abusive parents, molestation, whatever trauma you may be facing, don't let it go unresolved. You want to be able to show up as your true, authentic self, scars and all. And it does not matter what anybody else has to say. Set your boundaries, separate yourself, and heal. Because people are more worried about how they look to other people that can really care less. We looking for this validation in a world of people that are broken and scarred and bruised. But yet, it matters what they think about us. No. There's strength in finding help, and there's strength in healing. And once you begin to heal yourself, it shows up. And it is an inspiration to those that may not feel like they were strong enough to move forward. So I am here as an advocate. I'm your girl, showing my scars, showing my bruises. I'm a victim of molestation at 7, but I'm also a billboard for healing childhood traumas. Still got work to do. Still got work to do, like everybody else. But I set boundaries. I don't show up to places. I don't do what everybody else they do. I'm not finna run up and hold no conversation with a known pedophile in the family. You can't call me. You can't say nothing to me, because I am an advocate for the victim. I am not your family member. Period. Just because we share the same blood does not make me your family. It makes us kin. We are kinfolk, but not family. And then so often people say, well, they want to hear from you. I could care less. They would love that. I mean, everybody's sitting around like this is normal behavior. Like, we don't have to protect the children that can't protect themselves. It's time out for caring about what the family think when the family can care less about the trauma that you just endured. Let's get through this trauma that's unresolved so that we can heal completely. You will never forget any type of trauma, like I said, child abuse, any neglect, whatever, emotional abuse. You will never forget that. You will have flashes. You will have moments. You will have times where you are pissed completely off. But you have the right to speak your truth. You have a right to set boundaries, and you have a right to separate yourself. People always say, life is too short. You need to forgive. I can forgive. That don't mean that you have to be in my space. People that mistreat you know that life is too short as well. And what we do is we keep turning the other cheek. We keep teaching people that it's okay to mistreat you. Because I don't have to ask for your forgiveness, because life is too short. You're going to come to me as if you were the one that did me wrong. This is what we're teaching people. You can forgive. Please forgive, because that's for you. That is for your healing. But that doesn't mean that you have to allow disrespect in your space. You have a right to your boundaries. You have a right to do whatever it takes for you to heal from trauma. But my cry to you all is to heal, to talk it out, and to be that safe place for those that have been violated, and that may have endured that same trauma and didn't feel like they had anyone to run to. So I know that was heavy, but it was needed. Let's stop protecting the family's name because it looks good to the people that needs validation. And let's expose these stains that are amongst us. Stay tuned for Black Excellence 365.